When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Coming up on Chopper's Politics.
Can you say it in German?
Ja, es kommt gleich auf Chopper's Politics, Greg Hans hier im Gespräch. One of Rishi's top five priorities is, you know, stop the boats.
I know. I wish him joy.
We are now approaching Lewis. Please mind the gap between the train and the platform.
Hello and welcome to Chopper's Politics Podcast. I'm Christopher Hope, the Associate Editor for Politics at The Telegraph. You're joining me in a pub, but not the Red Lion in Whitehall. We're in the Anchor Pub in Ringmer, near Lewis. It's a Lib Dem Green council area that the Tories are looking to win in next week's local elections in England. And we're here with local Tory MP Maria Caulfield and Greg Hans, the Conservative Party chairman, who also speaks very good German, as you've just heard. Now, earlier, we stepped out to watch them knocking on some doors, and we listened in to what some voters had to say.
Good afternoon.
Hello. Hi, Maria. You're my MP.
Greg Hans, chairman of the party.
Oh, hello.
Sorry, my hand's a bit cold, but nice to meet you. Thank you for coming to the door and having
me. I've been up and down the country the last 3 weeks, from Ramsgate to Hartlepool, from Accrington down to Worcester. I've yet to have a conversation which is worsened by mentioning Rishi Sunak as Prime Minister. Always improves the mood, the disposition towards the Conservatives to us. So that is definitely an electoral asset. I think the opinion on the doorstep reflects in large part what the opinion polls are saying.
That should be a basic thing. If you mention the leader's name, it shouldn't be, it make things get worse. But are you saying it did that with previous leaders, maybe Boris Johnson?
Well, I wasn't party chairman at the time.
No.
So I was
but
typically
you were an MP,
not,
or you are an MP.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, my
he was
everyone's own constituency won't give you a national picture. Whereas at the moment, my picture is a bit more national, although it's, you know, I mean, you're still ultimately you're speaking to hundreds of people, and to do a representative opinion poll you need to speak to thousands of people.
Of course.
But I've yet to have anybody come to the door and say, I really think the answer is Keir Starmer. You know, that, I think, is also quite an encouraging sign.
I don't always agree with what you're doing, of course. I do wish you'd get the civil servants back to work. Mm. I was a civil servant in the Home Office for 40 years.
Really?
Gosh.
Okay. And I worked in the Asylum Directorate for the last few of those. And the mere fact that they say now they're doing one case a week is preposterous.
Oh, we're doing a big increase on that. We've got one a week to help clear the backlog. That's a big part of, as you know, passing the legislation this week in the House of Commons. Labour, Lib Dems all voted against the boats legislation. But we're putting the legislation through. Goes off to the Lords next,
now,
and we'll see what the Lords do. But you know, we've got to keep at it. We'll keep pushing it through. That's what the British people want us to do. It's one of Rishi's top five priorities, as you know, stop the boats.
I know. I wish him joy.
How do you think he's doing?
Jury's still out.
Okay.
Are you missing the previous Prime Minister but one?
Boris. And I voted for Liz Truss. And I still think she had some good ideas. It's just she went about them the wrong way. Yeah. So I really don't like the way they've really smashed her, you know, the media and everything. Because I thought she could have done a good job, okay.
But
you've got to do it gradually.
Rishi Sunak's five priorities: halving inflation, growth, cutting the debt, cutting the hospital waiting list, stopping the boats. That seems like the right thing.
Well, it's, yes, if it all works.
Yeah, well, I think we're absolutely making progress.
And what do you think locally? Because you've got three Green councillors here. What's your thoughts for next week?
I just sort of tend to vote Conservative because I always do.
Yeah. Very sensible.
Well, okay, yeah. Not entirely the idea, but yeah. Well, there's not, to my mind, although I'm not always with the Conservatives, what they do, there's just no viable alternative. The sort of Labour getting in fills me with horror, and always has.
Yeah.
And Lib Dems, well, they're never going to get in on their own. They're only going to be sitting on someone else's back.
They'll be propping up Keir Starmer.
So
here, the danger, I think, if you get a Lib Dem MP again, is that they will vote to put Keir Starmer in number 10, which would be a total disaster. Yeah.
So I do hope you get your seat back next year.
No,
but,
thank you.
Well, Maria's a brilliant
MP.
It
was tough last time as well.
So thank you very much for your time. And thanks
nice
very much
to see you all.
Your support for Maria. Yeah. She's a brilliant MP and a great minister, great person around, just knows health, being a practising nurse,
that's another issue,
knows
isn't it?
The issues really well.
Yeah. We've just won this battle in court, but it's just going to put their backs up, isn't it? So we're in for more trouble.
Get back round the table and negotiate on the pay.
Tonight, really, all these strikes. It's the teachers today. I noticed more children are out because the teachers are out.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Nice
to see you.
Nice to see you.
Okay, thank you for your support. Okay.
So, Maria, are you finding it is they like Rishi?
They do like Rishi, yes. I think they just quite like the fact that he's very focused. He's got his five priorities and they know what he's about.
If he delivers, that's okay. But if it doesn't, inflation's still staying high. The boats aren't stopped yet, all those things.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. I mean that's exactly
what they
say.
You've got to deliver, right?
Yeah, they like what he wants to do, but they want to see results.
Hello, it's Greg Hands and Maria Caulfield from the Conservatives.
Hello, hi.
Hello.
After the voters of Ringmer had their go, it was my turn to grill the party chairman, Greg Hands, back at the Anchor pub. Greg Hands, Tory party chairman, we're now sitting down. That was quite a walk. You walk very quickly for a man of your middle year youth.
Yes, middle youth. I like that, Crystal.
I was
like
going
that.
Down the wrong way with that conversation.
I like
but,
that. I'm 57, but I like to get from A to B quickly.
How many steps are you doing a day? Are you monitoring?
I don't know. I think at the last general election, I was doing about 30,000. I think I'm not doing that many this time. There's quite a bit of travel between constituencies.
Yes.
So I was down in Hastings earlier and then took the train from Hastings to Lewes. And then we'll take the train back to London. So in between.
And you weren't chairman last time. You were just a candidate last time, weren't you?
That's correct. Yeah, in Chelsea and Fulham, yeah.
How many council seats will you lose next week?
Well, look, I don't know. The independent forecasters, you know, the real experts in this space, Rallings and Thrasher, Professor John Curtis, all of them are saying that Conservatives will lose 1,000 seats. And I don't for a moment doubt it will be a difficult set of elections for the party. These seats were last fought in 2019, which was a very bad time for Labour. It was the last year of Corbyn in charge. It was just the run-up, if you like, to the 2019 general election, which is obviously very bad for Labour. I don't know, but what I do find is that our activist base, our councillors, our council candidates are working really hard, and I'm finding them upbeat.
Mm.
But
so
as
is that
I say,
credible?
The independent forecasts are 1,000 losses.
I mean, electoral calculators say 500. 1,000 is a worst case, but what's your internal number? Are you massaging expectations in the pub?
Well, I don't have an internal number. And what I do know is that the independent academics, who probably know best, are saying 1,000 losses.
What does success look like?
I think success
obviously not
looks,
1,000.
Success looks like, I wouldn't put a number on success. I think success is actually much more down to where the government is heading overall on delivering the five priorities: halving inflation, restoring growth, cutting debt, reducing hospital waiting lists, and stopping the boats. That is the
That's the last
success.
Time
that's
you can say them on this, because that's literally 30 seconds of my time with you. You can't keep doing that. I know you're told to do it by number 10. We'll come to those
but
in a minute.
You asked me the question, what does success look like? And success is delivering on the five priorities.
I'm thinking about next week at the local elections rather than the bigger picture, which you're quick to go to. You've been on the doorsteps today. We've met some people. Do they miss Boris Johnson, your last leader but one?
Well, I think Boris is still an asset for the party. And
he's not campaigning,
still,
is he, though? He's not helping.
We'll see. But crucially, I find that even people who like Boris Johnson, none of them, none of the ones that I've met, think that Rishi Sunak is not doing a good job.
So whenever I'm on the doorstep, I always find that mentioning Rishi Sunak as Prime Minister improves the conversation.
He polls well.
In my direction. He polls well. And even people who like Boris, they're not exclusive to people who think Rishi's doing a good job and like Rishi. In other words, you can definitely both like Boris, you can like Boris, you can like Liz, you can also like Rishi.
Do you want him to help campaign? He's a great campaigner. He reaches the parts of this country others can't reach.
Well, look, I mean, I've known Boris for 30 years. I've been out campaigning with Boris when he was mayor of London. I remember once I got asked by the party to organise a walkabout down King's Road in my constituency. And I organised a walkabout for the hour he's going to be with us, get halfway down the King's Road. Of course, we never made it further than the newspaper cellar outside Sloane Square Station. He was mobbed at that time. He was very, very popular as Mayor of London. He is definitely a campaigning asset for the Conservative Party. But we'll have to see what Boris is going to do for the next election.
But how about next week? I mean, getting the vote out on the council elections. Have you asked him to help?
Well, I think that's kind of down to Boris at the moment. Mm. You know, he's just been readopted as candidate for Uxbridge and South Ruislip. And, you know, the party will support him in that. But we'll have to see what Boris will want to do next year.
Is it the battle of the boring at the moment, Sunak v Starmer?
No, I don't think so, because I think people see Rishi Sunak is actually getting on with the job. And actually what they want to see is a period of delivery, dealing with the difficult challenges facing the country, high inflation, high energy prices, the Vladimir Putin challenge on the security side, making sure that the uncontrolled migration in the channel, the boats is sorted out. There's quite a lot of things that I think people want to see sorted out at the moment. That's what we're focusing on, the people's priorities.
It does hang on those priorities, the five things you mentioned there. Inflation is still in double figures. It was meant to fall to single figures, wasn't it, in February? It hasn't happened yet. The economy is going to be just growing this year, maybe. Stop the boats. Well, that hasn't started yet. When are the first flights to Rwanda? We don't know. Problem with NHS waiting list caused by strikes, possibly. Debt might fall. I mean, these are things which some of which are outside of the PM's control. And if you don't get them right, you're letting down voters, aren't you? And you're losing the point of voting for Sunak.
The first thing to say is that nobody pretended the five priorities, delivering on the five priorities, was going to be easy. The idea is that
only one of them is this year, isn't it? That which is halving inflation. The rest are not time limited. Is that right?
Well, we'll have to see. But the five priorities were not designed to be easy things to achieve. They are pushing the government in making sure that we deliver on those five things. It's all about delivery at the moment. That's what the people want to see. They want to see their government getting on with what is a difficult situation. We've inherited a high inflation, high energy prices, Putin's invasion of Ukraine. That is, if you like, the difficult hand that's been dealt the government.
Well, you say inherited. You've been in charge for 13 years. I mean, it's on your watch, all this. You can't blame it on some mythical other government.
But Vladimir Putin invaded Ukraine last year.
Yeah.
The pandemic. Now, these have been a difficult
backdrop. These are black swan events that weren't forecast or weren't expected.
Well, they certainly weren't expected back in 2010 or even in 2015 or even, to be frank, in 2019.
Taxes. Why can't you say we're going to cut taxes if we're in the next general election?
Well, I think the priority at the moment is delivering lower inflation. People are definitely feeling the pinch with higher bills. That, I think, is where people want us to concentrate on. And that is where the focus is. We also have the focus on reducing debt, growing the economy as well. Of course, we would like to be reducing taxes at the right time.
So what's the reason, then, if you're a Tory, to vote for the Conservatives, if you haven't got the sunny up plans of getting more money back from the government? Is it an issue of competency against risk? Is that the point?
I think there's two parts to that question, Chris. The first is the local elections coming up next week, where we're asking people to vote Conservative because Conservative councils ultimately deliver better. They deliver better for less council tax. Conservative councils cost you £80 less on a Band D council tax, but deliver
more. Is
that based
on some external analysis?
That is, Band D as a comparator is what has always been used as the council tax comparator. Okay. Conservative councils deliver you more. Conservative councils fill, for example, more potholes than Labour and Lib Dem councils put together. We deliver typically better services as well on council services. So that is the election for next week. We've got some fantastic Conservative councillors, council candidates up for election right the way across England next week. I think in terms of the general election, I don't think people are yet in the mode of thinking about who to choose at the next general election. I think they're much more interested in seeing the Conservative government delivering well and delivering well on the five priorities, making sure that we improve their lives over the next year. And I don't think they're really thinking about an election yet.
But will you as a party fight the next election on cutting taxes? That will be a differentiation with Labour.
Again, I think it's too early to tell on that, Chris. Mm-hmm. I think the focus at the moment is on delivery this year, and we will see what sort of a prospectus, a manifesto, we offer to the country next year.
You voted to remain in the Brexit referendum 7 years ago now. Do you regret that? Do you wish you voted to leave?
No, I don't, Chris. To be honest, the question as it was at that time, in June 2016, looking at what I knew at the time, it would have been difficult. I mean, emotionally, my wife German, is German, my children are bilingual, English, German.
You're bilingual yourself, aren't you?
I wouldn't say I'm bilingual because that is a specific term, but I speak German fluently. I would be able to do this interview in German. I'm not saying you're an easy interviewer, Chris, but I would be able to do this in German. So, I mean, emotionally, it would have been difficult for me to be anything other, I think, than a Remainer. However, you know, it's a different question today. And I think that Brexit was always a set of challenges and always a set of opportunities. And I think the government now is doing very well on realising on the opportunities and doing well as well on minimising those challenges. So on the opportunities, I've long been a trade minister. I've been a trade minister for a large part of the last 6 years. And delivering, for example, on joining the Comprehensive and Progressive Trans-Pacific Partnership, the CPTPP free trade area, that is an amazing achievement, something the EU is not able to do, would not be able to do, but opens up growing markets in the Far East for the UK. And that is a fantastic opportunity. So I don't regret that either. I mean, I think it's a fantastic opportunity.
And critics say we've lost access to a big market on our doorstep, the EU.
Well, we haven't lost access to the EU market. You know, we've got an entirely quota-free, tariff-free trade agreement with the EU. We need to be exporting more to the EU. That is definitely a challenge that the government is aware of. So we've got more to do in trade with the EU. We need to be exporting more to the EU. But that's something that also Kemi Badenoch, the whole team at Department for Business and Trade, is working hard on.
We're reporting today that this retained EU law bill is not going to get rid of 4,000 measures from the statute book, but only as few as 800. I mean, 20% of the total number because of a delay in working through all the different measures.
I hadn't seen that report, Chris.
No, but it's concerning. I mean, do you think that the benefit of Brexit is not being taken advantage of by your government?
Well, no, I don't agree with that. And I think trade is a classic example, having a different regulatory approach. I think financial services, some of the things that are going on in science and technology, I think are showing the opportunities that are there. That is what is key, is taking advantage of those opportunities. I've never been a believer in all of those kind of meaningful votes in 2018, 2019. I was never in favor of doing something like staying in a customs union, staying in the single market. I very much took the view the UK, the electorate, voted decisively to leave the European Union. That is what the people want us to do, and that is what we have delivered on. Mm. And we now need to maximize the opportunities from doing that.
When is next election, general election?
Well, it's not my job to set the election date. It's my job to be ready.
What are the two windows?
To be ready for when the Prime Minister decides to make that decision. You know, it has to be held, as you know, by January 2025. I think it's too early to start speculating about a specific date.
Has work started on the manifesto yet?
No work has started on the manifesto yet. We are still, as I said, very much in the mode of delivery. Delivering on the people's priorities, getting to grips with inflation, with debt, with growth, hospital waiting lists, and small boats.
You mentioned, as I said, you wouldn't end up, but you did manage to get them in again, second time, well done. Small boats, when will the first flights to Rwanda take off?
Well, that I don't know. It's working its way through the courts at the moment. Mm. Government is fighting
appeal
those
court
cases really hard. Sorry. Sorry, excuse me.
That's a campaign cold, listeners.
It might be. I don't think it's a cold. It might be a spot of hay fever or something. But
stop the boats means stop the boats. So when do the first flights take off to deter the people making that perilous crossing across
the
channel?
Well, I think as soon as we've worked through those court cases
this year,
the government, well, it's that's in the hands of the courts, how quickly we can work through those courts cases. But we're very, very keen. We're committed to the Rwanda project, committed to making those flights happen just as soon as we're able to.
And it's not unfair or cruel to people who are sent to Rwanda?
No, I don't think it is. I think other European countries are following a similar approach, either with Rwanda or with other partners. I think it's an entirely reasonable, sensible course of action. So the government has got my full support. I think the British people support it as well.
You've been well known on Twitter for sharing a letter from Liam Byrne that warned the incoming Tory Lib Dem government in 2010 that there's no money left. You've retweeted it so far 29 times in your 68 days as chairman. Why are you obsessed about news 13 years ago, Greg Hands?
Well, because I think it illustrates what a lot of people know or suspect, that Labour governments are terrible at running the country's public finances, and that successive Labour governments in my lifetime have left the country with no money.
So it's a reminder.
It is a reminder, pointing out to people that it was Labour who left us with that legacy in 2010. And it is a clear reminder, the letter from the then Chief Secretary of the Treasury.
And is the letter anywhere near your purse at the moment?
It's in my pocket.
I thought so. Is it fair, though, to do that to Labour, given Liam Byrne is nowhere near the top of the party, and it was a while ago, and you've been in power for 13 years? Is it not a bit lame not to find a new thing to attack Labour with than rely on an attack?
There's plenty of current reasons not to vote Labour as well, Chris, if that's what you're looking for me
about. Okay.
I mean, I think the fact that Keir Starmer has not cut through with the public, that Keir Starmer has changed his view on almost everything, going back to Brexit, you know, this is the man who did want to have a second referendum. He wanted to vote Remain, and now he's talking about the opportunity.
Are you finding it's polling well then? Is this letter remembered by people? Is that the point? Was that why you're pulling it out all the time with your pocket?
Well, I think we're making a very important point about Labour, that last time around they're terrible at running the public finances. They left the country in a position where for every £4 the government was spending, £1 was borrowed. There's no way that you can have your public finances, your personal finances, sustainable at that level, the position that Labour left us in 2010.
But the choice of 24 tax rises under Rishi Sunak, as Keir Starmer said in Prime Minister's Questions this week, tax burden at a 70-year high, however high it is. I mean, the Tories' record on the economy is being criticised by your opponents, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think all of those attacks have at their root either the increased spending from the pandemic or as a result of higher energy prices driven by Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine. I might also add, I don't think Labour have pledged to reduce any of those taxes or reverse any of those taxes. I think people know that the Conservative Party is more likely to be delivering lower taxes in the future than any alternative Labour government under Keir Starmer would. That is also really important.
And your party isn't out of ideas. Some people say privately a period in opposition might be a good thing for the Tory party.
That's a terrible idea. It's not a good idea for the Conservatives to be in opposition. The important thing that is for Rishi Sunak to be competently getting on with delivering good governance.
You're chairman of the party. You've got to find a new candidate to fight Sadiq Khan in London mayoral elections next year. We've got Samuel Kasumu on our podcast this week. Will he be your candidate?
Well, it's up to the London Conservative Party members to make that choice. I'm confident there'll be a really good list of candidates going to the membership, to the wider party. There'll be a number of candidates going forward, and then to the hustings, two or three candidates, and then to a ballot by all London Conservative Party members.
When's that? In September time?
In due course. Well, we're going to be setting out the timetable for when that will happen, but that will happen. We'll have a candidate in place before the summer recess.
And you can get a good challenge, can you, to Sadiq Khan?
Well, I think from what I know about the candidates who are interested in going for it, and nominations have yet to open, but I think we'll have a strong field and we'll have an excellent candidate to take that fight to Sadiq Khan, who has been appalling for London. He has been, I think, probably the worst
but
mayor.
But London's a Labour city, isn't it?
I disagree.
I know you're a Tory MP for an in London seat. But
I think a good candidate would be very capable of winning that race. Sadiq Khan is unpopular, polls worse than the Labour Party. I think with a good candidate, we can unseat Sadiq Khan.
OK. Well, Greg Hands, the Tory Party chairman, here in Lewis in a pub. We like pubs, don't we? Thank you for joining us this week on Chopper's Politics Podcast. Thank you. Greg Hands there, with some news about when the Conservatives might select a candidate to fight Sadiq Khan, who's going for his third term as Labour Mayor of London next May. And I'll be talking to one of those possible candidates right after this.
War in Ukraine is reshaping our world. For the past 12 months, the Telegraph's team of experts in London and correspondents on the ground have been analysing Putin's invasion of Ukraine every weekday on the Ukraine the Latest podcast. With over 24 million listens, Ukraine the Latest is the go-to source for up-to-date analysis on the war from every angle. Military, humanitarian, political, economic, historical, just to name a few. Each episode, we unpack the past 24 hours of the conflict, as well as regularly being joined by our own on-the-ground correspondents and guests who take us into their own experience of the war. Search for Ukraine the Latest in the same place you're listening to this podcast, and follow the podcast so you don't miss an episode. Thank you for listening.
And we're back. Now, before travelling down to Lewes, we were in our usual pub, the Red Lion, in Westminster, where I bumped into Samuel Kasumu, who has emerged this week to be the Tory frontrunner for their mayoral candidate in next year's London mayoral elections, after he received the backing of Grant Shapps and Steve Baker, both government ministers, and former Home Secretary Priti Patel. Samuel Kasumu, welcome to Chopper's Politics Podcast. Great to have you on.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Now, you had trouble finding the Red Lion today.
Yeah, I mean, thankfully, some of my old number 10 colleagues were walking past and they were able to point me in the right direction.
Now, you've emerged this week as a frontrunner for the Tory candidature to fight Sadiq Khan in next year's London mayoral elections. It's always a problem, and I've been covering politics for 20 years, for the Tories to find a candidate. Back in the day, I mean, Boris Johnson emerged on late ahead of the 2008 mayoralty. Why you?
Well, firstly, you know, in a political race, it's not about where you start, it's where you finish. So we are not complacent. We know that there is a need for an Herculean effort for us to be able to make the case for why I think I'm the best candidate. Why I think I'm the best candidate is for a number of reasons. Firstly, I have extensive political experience. I joined the party as a 19-year-old. I've been a campaigner, started in Chipping Barnet, North London. I've been a councillor, cabinet member for climate change and environment. I was the candidate in Croydon North at the 2017 general elections, where I learned so much from working alongside Gavin Barwell. And I've worked in Downing Street, and. And so, you know, there's a CV there. But also, my science is being able to engage with people from different backgrounds. That is why I played a leading role in the disbursement of the COVID-19 vaccines. And I want to bring that science and that know-how to this campaign.
You're 34. You know,
35.
30, forgive me, 35.
36 in August.
So soon you'll be, won't mind me saying, you're younger than you are, but okay, I'll take that from you. But you are, never been an MP, have you? Now, previous candidates for mayoralty have always been an MP, haven't they?
Yeah, but in my opinion, being a mayor is very similar to being a councillor, because especially a cabinet.
Because you're a councillor now in Welland and Hatfield.
Yeah, because you have control of budgets, etc. Whereas if you're a member of parliament, there's a slightly different constitutional role that you play. And so I think I have enough skills that are transferable for this particular job. And also, there are very amazing mayors across the country who also never MPs. You know, Andy Street was never MP, and as far as I'm aware, Ben Houchen, who I went to visit just a month ago, as part of my
Tees Valley
work experience, fact finding mission, also wasn't a member of parliament.
At what point do you look in the mirror and say, Samuel Kasumu, I can see you being the mayor of London? That's a big moment, isn't it, in your life? When was it? What was the day?
Well, I don't think that time has ever come.
Okay.
I've had
to be mayor, though.
Yeah,
must be coming.
I've had a conversation with the wife, and her response was, well, if you want to do it, I'll support you, but just make sure you recognise you still have to do the dishes and you still have to pick up the kids. So that's the social contract that I'm under. Okay. But on a serious note, after I left Downing Street in 2021, and I spent the last 18 months writing a book, travelling the world, speaking to many political leaders about, you know, what the future of conservatism looks like. And then it dawned on me that actually a period of modernization will have to return. And I feel like I want to play a very significant role in that. And I also think that London is the best platform to begin that
conversation. Your book's called The Power of the Outsider, launching soon. And you're looking to sell out the Hackney Empire for a big Q&A with Tim Campbell from The Apprentice. Mm-hmm. That's tickets going for £59 each at the top price.
Well,
you sell out?
There are literally 20 tickets that are going for that price.
Okay.
And so the average price is about 25 quid.
Oh, fine.
And we're fairly confident the marketing begins properly on Friday, and we're sure we're going to have a full house. And more importantly, a very good conversation, an interesting conversation about the future of London, the future of this country.
Let's come on into your policy platform in a second. Why do you leave number 10? Did you fall out of Boris Johnson? Because you were his point person on liaising with the black community, weren't you, in the UK?
Well, not just. So my portfolio was civil society and communities, and part of that meant how we engaged with Britain's minority ethnic population, which, again, is part of the science.
But you quit, and no one knows why.
Well, Yes, that is a good point. Not nobody. Some people do know.
I don't know, and I'm meant to know what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, firstly, me and Boris Johnson, for avoidance of doubt, did not fall out. We had a very good relationship. He was always very supportive about all of the work that I oversaw. And actually, when I left, he didn't want me to go. And number 10, for most of the times when I was there, was a very collaborative environment. I felt very happy to work there and function there. It was a tough job. And so a point came when there were some tensions about some of the direction of travel.
Which bits of it? Was it COVID linked? I mean, it was 2021.
Yeah. I mean, I was involved as in vaccine deployment and before that, you know, trying to stop as many people as possible from dying from the...
So what was the division that forced you out?
I mean, some of it was around, you know, how you make the case for some of the conservative ideals that we were mostly aligned on. And so I think, you know, sometimes when you don't agree with people, the best thing to do is to get them around the table and try to be respectful about how you articulate that difference. And I also think that if you are maybe at times a bit too aggressive, it may work for you in the short term, but in the long term, people...
That was the Vote Leave campaigning. And I saw that personally when they won the election in 2019. I couldn't believe the way they were still fighting the fight, really. Once they become one power, it's crazy. But
you know, I always tell people, politicians usually remember or think about the next election, whereas a statesman or a public servant thinks about the next generation. And so as someone who is very passionate about conservatism and conservative policies, I'm very focused on how do we make sure that the next generation know that this is the best way to govern. And you don't do that by hitting them over the head or calling them names, in my opinion. In my opinion.
Well,
and not everybody
that's
agrees.
Absolutely, but credible, you know, Samuel. Yeah. So Boris Johnson is the most successful Tory ever to run for London Mayor. Is he backing your campaign?
Wait and see.
Is he back? Were you and me in the pub? No one's here apart from Louisa. She's half asleep in a corner after an awards due last night.
Where was my invite?
We didn't win, by the way, again. Okay, but well. I forget that. Did you?
If I'm Mayor, you will be winning. I'm joking.
So he might back you.
So where
would be a great endorsement for you, wouldn't he?
Look. Boris Johnson, as you say, was a very successful mayor, and it just goes to show that you can be a Conservative and a successful mayor in London. So anyone who thinks that's not the case is completely wrong. What I would say is, as you've mentioned, people are saying I am the front runner right now, but it's not where you start, it's where you finish. We have a very clear campaign. This has been, you know, 18 months, 2 years in the making. And so people will just have to wait and see.
Okay. But you have got the backing of Priti Patel, Grant Shapps, Steve Baker. Those are big beasts, use that term in Westminster. What is your policy platform? What will you do differently? You're concerned about the ULEZ zones, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, on ULEZ, my position is very clear. I think that Sadiq Khan has no mandate for spending over £300 million on an extension that most people in outer London seem to not want. And so I urge him to stop and to wait and to put it to the people in the next election if he thinks it's the right thing to do. If he doesn't do that, and if the court proceedings are not successful, then we're going to have to find solutions come May.
So would you drop it in outer London?
Well, look,
to explain to listeners, if you don't live in London, you pay to drive in if you're in a kind of polluting vehicle, and it seemed to be damaging to so-called white van men or women, people who need to get to work, maybe public service workers, nurses, and others who drive into London to
exactly.
work.
Yeah, my position is, first and foremost, I'm a fiscal conservative. And so I'm deeply uncomfortable with the idea of somebody spending £300 to £400 million, maybe even more, pounds in me just saying today that I'm definitely going to just reverse it. I think because of the nature or the extent of the expenditure, it's only right for people to have a choice. You know, so once we get to May 2024, what do you want?
So borough by borough,
guaranteed you're going to have an opportunity
referendum.
To have a local referendum. Now, the thing is, in the UK, it's not something that is very common, but in other countries like
the people outside London on the boundary can't vote in those referendums, can they? It's only those living there.
Yes, and I think that is the fair thing to do
because they're paying the rates, they're paying the taxes.
Exactly that. Having said that, I'm very cognizant of the fact that some very important public servants, nurses, healthcare workers who live just outside London will struggle with the ULEZ charge, and we need them to come in because we need folks to look after them as well.
You want to signal local support for the ULEZ, but what about pollution, that kind of thing? I suppose if there's big concerns about pollution, they vote for it, don't they? And that means you're not...
Not necessarily.
I mean, that's what justifies it for Sadiq Khan, right?
Yeah, not necessarily, because I think that there is so much more you can do. I'm a cabinet member for the environment and climate change, and so this is my science as well, and so I know the things you can do around decarbonisation of buildings, encouraging people to reduce their food waste, etc. There's a long list of things.
You're a councillor in Welland Hatfield, but you live in London, do you?
I have a place in Barnet, but me and my family are in the process of moving back. So,
a second home in Barnet.
Yeah.
And but you live outside London.
Yeah. And but I'm London born and bred. Born in Paddington, grew up in Barnet, and on my way back home to serve the people of London.
What's the full qualification to be London mayor if you don't live here?
I think it is a qualification. And one of the reasons why I...
You were born here, brought up here, but you moved to Welland Hatfield. Yeah. Moving back.
And one of the reasons why I moved out is because I faced the same challenges as so many Londoners. I couldn't afford to buy a place in London. It's only now I'm lucky enough to have the capital to be able to do so. And so, you know, it's a homecoming, but also to serve the people and to improve outcomes for folks who've had the similar challenges as myself.
So away from you, Les, what else will you do?
First and foremost, biggest challenge is the housing crisis. And as I say, one of the reasons why I ended up outside of London is not because I necessarily wanted to, but because I couldn't afford at the time to buy a home for my family, right? Which, again, is something I could do now. So housing, number one on my agenda. Number two is around this idea of aspiration and opportunity. I want to make North London the cybersecurity capital of Europe. I want to create hundreds of thousands of jobs, and I've committed to setting up a £100 million fund for founders from underrepresented backgrounds to really turbocharge business and entrepreneurship, dealing with some of the challenges around financial services and our competitiveness. And number three is, of course, dealing with the issue of crime, improving trust and confidence in the police, but not just that, making sure that the police know that I'm on their side.
Yeah. You're the boss of the Met Police Chief.
And this is the thing, I think sometimes Sadiq Khan forgets that he is the boss, he's the strategic head, he's the one responsible for all the outcomes, not
He did force out Quick Custer Dick eventually, didn't he? He lost confidence in her.
Yeah, but you know, it's easy to get rid of somebody to make yourself look good. It's less easy to have a very clear plan about how you're going to improve things.
Have you met him yet?
Sadiq, yeah, we've been in the same room together. He's not always very friendly with me, especially once he found out that, you know, I may or may not be running. And he seems to be stealing some of my policy ideas, but that's fine.
You can take that.
We have plenty more, so he can keep stealing them.
The big issue for some Telegraph readers is the so-called culture wars, statues, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
The Corporation of London and lots of big institutions, big moneyed institutions in London are reviewing their history with the slave trade. And do you approve of pulling statues down, covering up pictures, rehanging walls in museums with questionable art?
Well, firstly, I saw the Prime Minister's comments at PMQs yesterday, and I agree with him. I don't think Britain should apologise for the role that we played in the transatlantic slave trade for a number of reasons. I think a lot of people don't realise that before William the Conqueror arrived here in 1066, Britons actually enslaved themselves. and it was the Normans that thought that was barbaric, and so as a result, they abolished.
Yes. So how far do you go back is your point?
How far do you go back? Where do you stop apologising? Because I think every single person probably has an ancestor somewhere who was involved in some kind of evil act or activity that will have had a material impact around where we are today. But I think the more broader point is I think most people from African and Caribbean backgrounds and beyond are more interested in how you improve the lots of people that are here today and also future generations. So those two things I'm completely passionate about and committed to. One is dealing with the disparities that still exist in some circles and spaces. And number two is improving relationships with Commonwealth countries across the world. And that is, they are two things that will be a priority for me.
Are you letting down other black people saying that?
No, I think my record on serving people from all backgrounds is very clear. I mean, when I was 19, I set up a student network for students from underrepresented backgrounds. The search firm that I set up focuses on helping people have access to board opportunities. So, you know, I'm not a culture warrior for the avoidance of doubt, but I focus on the substance and delivery. And as I say, I think my record is very clear.
Well, Samuel Kasomu, thank you for joining us this week on Chopper's Politics Podcast. It's great to have you on. And let's see what happens in the next 12 months. The election is 12 months next week.
Well, this is it. And if I am lucky enough to still be the front runner at the end of this election,
you'll come on the podcast again.
Make sure you have me back.
Of course I will. Now, don't forget your mug.
Awesome.
Samuel Kasomu there. Well, that's all for this week's Chopper's Politics, listeners. Thank you to my guests, Maria Caulfield, MP, Greg Hands, MP, and of course, Samuel Kasomu. Thank you to my producers, Louisa Wells and Giles Gear. But most importantly of all, thank you to you for listening. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please do leave us a rating and a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It really helps other people find this show when they're looking for one. For daily insights into the world of Westminster, please do sign up to my daily Chopper's Politics newsletter. It arrives straight into your email inbox every weekday. And the link for that will be in the show notes this episode.
And don't forget to read my weekly Peterborough Diary gossip column, out every Friday at 7pm online, and in Saturday's copy of The Daily Telegraph. As always, please do buy a copy of The Telegraph if you can. Until next time, though, from the Anchor Pub here in Ringmer, cheerio!
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.